Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
And welcome to the Veterans News Hour for August 14th, 2017. This is David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, David, and good evening to our guests and to all our listeners out there. Before we bring on our special guest tonight, I would like to thank the sponsors of tonight's show, American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and the Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans in disability cases and military personnel actions. I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show. We really welcome the callers, such as our veterans and families of veterans. So you can call us at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. Over to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Tonight's special guest is Frederick Hinton. Before we begin our interview, I will tell you about him. Fred Hinton served in the United States Army for 21 years and 9 months. Due to his service and valor in war, he was awarded 2 Bronze Star Medals, the Combat Action Badge, and the Army Commendation Medal with Valor, among many other awards. He served 3 combat tours overseas, with 2 tours to Iraq and 1 tour to Afghanistan. He spent a total of 39 months, that's just over 3 years, deployed to war zones. During his first deployment, he sustained his first traumatic brain injury, or TBI. However, being the dedicated soldier that he was and is, he hid his problems as best as he could, even as he served a second and third tour overseas. Upon his final return home to the United States, things had gotten so bad that he couldn't remember how to get home at times, and his work in the Army began to suffer because of his traumatic brain injury as well as post-traumatic stress disorder. He then retired from the Army, and despite his conditions, he is now able to serve as an eligibility specialist with Operation TBI Freedom, also called OTF, Operation TBI Freedom, which is a program of Craig Hospital in Colorado that provides support for veterans and active duty military personnel with traumatic brain injuries. Fred Hinton is with us tonight to talk about his experience and about Operation TBI Freedom. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Fred Hinton to the Veterans News Hour. Good evening, Fred. How are you tonight?
Good evening, Dave. Great to be here with you.
Well, it's great to have you on our show. And, Fred, we have much to talk about tonight. But let's start by you telling us more about yourself and perhaps some highlights of your Army career.
All right. You covered a little bit of it. Yeah, I served 21 years in the military. I did 3 combat tours. After my first combat tour, I had we were in a pretty bad spot, and so we sustained a lot of IED blasts, and so I took a lot of those, and as a normal heart charger that I was, I kind of refused to believe after the deployment that I had some issues kind of going on, headache, irritabilities, you name it, the whole gamut of diagnosis was kind of running through me, but I wanted to continue to serve and to continue to serve my country, so I went on a second and third deployment. But it just kind of caught up with me until I realized that I needed to get some help and to kind of really face the issues that I had going on. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. I got some help. I returned back to Colorado after my retirement from the military, and where I found Operation TBI Freedom. I not only worked there, but I was a client. I was looking for some resources. Yeah, I was looking for some resources and referrals to kind of help me with what I was dealing with. Once I got out of the military, I just felt lost. I felt like I didn't belong to anybody, and I didn't have a sense of purpose. But OTS gave me that sense of purpose, and I wasn't really looking for anything else but just some direction and guidance. And they gave me a lot of education about what I was dealing with in TBI, and they also helped my family for us to get some type of counseling together as a family so we could all understand this together.
Well, that's great, and I know we're going to be talking in much more detail about Operation TBI Freedom and how it got started, what it does. But if you wouldn't mind telling us more, because I think a very important thing for our listeners, which is a heavy veteran and veteran family audience, but not limited to veterans and veteran families, but those that may have never served in the military or may not have been terribly interested in military issues, but are interested in just listening to our show. Could you tell us more about, because, you know, the years are going by now, and the war now in 2017 isn't what it was 10 years ago. Just to enlighten us or refresh the memories of us, could you tell us more about what it was like over in Iraq and Afghanistan? How was the war going at the times you were over there? You know, what was the military trying to do, and you know, the units you were associated with? Basically, just looking for you to maybe tell us, you know, what was going on, and then tell us more about, you know, the situation. I know IEDs were kind of a signature weapon over there, but could you tell us more about just what was going on and what was like serving over in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Sure. So I went in during the height of the surge. My first deployment was 05 to 2006. And so during that time, we had a lot of soldiers, airmen, and Marine on the ground there in Iraq. And I was stationed in Balad, Iraq. And our primary duties, I was attached to an FSC. I was in 1-8 Infantry, 3rd Brigade, 4th ID. And our primary responsibility and roles was to provide logistical support to the warfighter. And we spent many days and nights out on the road making that happen so that the warfighter could continue to do what they needed to do to move forward. So that tour was just, it was a rough one. There was just constant IEDs, just several of them that I took. I was the lead vehicle for most of the convoys, and my team and I, we just were, our job was to spot IEDs, and if we didn't spot them, we would hope that if something should happen, it happened to us and not the rest of the convoy behind us. And so that was really our primary role, was to make sure that everybody that that was behind us, that they were safe and we got to our objective safely. And then my second deployment was a 15-month deployment. I went from 07 to 09 to Mosul, Iraq. That was a difficult one. This was when they were going to make their last stand, the insurgents. This was the place that was going to happen in that area. So, and I was still with 3rd Brigade, 4th ID. I was in 1-8 still. And we were chosen to go to Mosul based off our reputation. We were originally going to be somewhere else. But we got the call and said, hey, we need you up in Mosul. We need your battalion there. So we left and went there for 15 months. And that was a difficult one. We sustained a lot of casualties during that 15-month deployment. And that was a rough one for a lot of people that went on that one. And then my third one, I went to Afghanistan 2010, 2011. Another one was it was a difficult one. They're never easy. All these deployments are not easy. And so when I got back, it was just trying to face a new world after being deployed for so long, and coming back to civilization. It was quite difficult for not only me, but for all those that I went with, just trying to readjust to society. And they were all difficult and all challenging, and they all have their different aspects.
Right. Well, I thank you for giving us that overview, because I think it's very important. And you said your second tour was 07 to 09?
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah, I think 07 wasn't one of 07 was one of perhaps the multiple surges when the war was going really poorly. And as I recall, that's when President George W. Bush decided they needed to send in a lot more troops to try to put down the, I mean, the growing insurgencies. Is my memory right on that?
That's correct, yep.
Yeah, and now, I know this may be a very kind of basic question for you and for those that work in Operation TBI Freedom, but and you said you experienced many IED explosions. For the benefit of those, our listeners, and even for myself, because I was never in that situation, can you tell us more about what it was like to experience an IED explosion? You said you were in the lead vehicle of convoys. Can you give us kind of an idea of what that was like?
You know, that's a great question. Many people have asked that question, those that have not been in the military and not experienced. It's something that you can't really describe. It's the classic answer. It's just straight out of a movie. But when you're in it, it's fog and haze, and you're trying to gather your bearings about yourself. And when that explosion happens, it's really hard to describe how that is and how that affects you. And then when you come through it, you're on adrenaline and you're trying to regain composure, and you can go into muscle memory of all the training that you've done. Nothing can ever prepare you for taking a blast, but you hope that what you've done and what you prepared to do prior to deployment, that it kicks in. And for the most part, all of my loss that I had, it did kick in. And I'm appreciative for everything that I was taught and trained.
Well, thank you for sharing that with you. And I've just got just one more question before I'm going to turn it over to Richard Hurley, because he has some questions. And the question I have is this. So can you tell us more about how you were doing by the end of your career in terms of coping with PTSD and TBI? We've had in our prior shows over the last 6 months a number of veterans and veteran family members of veterans who have suffered from PTSD and have described the rather severe difficulties they faced in terms of trying to cope, and particularly when they get back in civilian life without much support, or at least enough support. what was your experience, if you wouldn't mind sharing that with us, about dealing with PTSD and TBI?
Sure, not at all. So I didn't realize that I had an issue or that I had a problem or that I even had PTSD or some effects of a TBI, not till it started to show itself in ugly forms. In my case, I got very upset, very irritable at the littlest things. And it was affecting my family. And the person that knows you the most kind of can tell you when there's something going on and you're not yourself. So that happened to be my wife. You know, my wife said, hey, you're just not yourself. There's something going on, and I think you need to talk to somebody about kind of what's going on. This kind of manifested itself in nightmares, in my dreams. It manifested itself in my everyday dealing with people. My short temperedness, lack of sleep, everything that you can kind of think of that's associated with PTSD, I pretty much had all those signs, and I was trying to deal with it by myself and trying to cope. Because let's face it, it still is taboo to even admit that you have PTSD or TBI, and I was one of those guys that I didn't want to admit that I had something going on. And I don't use that PTSD as a crutch. What I want people to understand is that those that have PTSD or TBI, it doesn't need to define who you are. It is something that happened and is a cause of what you did or what you saw, but it does not need to define who you are. And I had to learn that, over many, many therapy sessions, and I realized that it's not who I am. It's not who I was before, and that there are some things that we can learn through therapy that you can put in your kit bag and that you can pull out when you do have certain things that trigger you.
I see. Well, thank you for that, Fred. Richard, let me turn it over to you now.
Thank you, David. Hey, welcome, Fred. Thanks for being on our
show
tonight.
Yeah, no,
you said something very interesting about your many therapy sessions. You know, as David indicated, we have, I can't even tell you how many veterans we represent that are currently suffering from PTSD, NTBI. We have a lot of PTSD as a result of MST. So you talk about the many therapy sessions that you were, that have helped you. What do you think of the care provided by the Army and the VA?
Great question. So I think it comes down really to the individual and how they are about their care and getting involved. For me, I really wanted to know what was going on. I knew this was not me. The isolating, the panic attacks, and I really wanted to get back to some type of normalcy, whatever that was. And I was engaged in my own treatment. So I went and I just kind of bit the bullet. I was like, look, even though this may be somewhat embarrassing, I need to find ways to get better. So while I was in the military, I went and sought out treatment. I actually went in just for a primary condition, just a lack of sleep. And my primary care physician said, hey, how long has this been going on? I said, quite some time, and we talked about, you know, the nightmares, and he referred me to my mental health provider, and I was okay with that because I was actively being engaged in my own treatment, and I wanted to kind of find out more and how I could go about doing that. As I transitioned, I still continued that because what we tend to do as warriors, when we get into therapy and we start have a couple sessions and things go great, we think everything's fine, and so we stop everything, cold turkey. And we tend to say, okay, we got it. But then we have some relapses, and we take a couple steps forward, and then we take a couple steps backwards. So I was actively engaged in my treatment, and I wanted to do better and to find out more.
Wow, that's now that's something. In terms of the VA, though, you know, once you left the military, did you continue with the VA?
I did. I went to the VA. You know, you hear a lot of horror stories about the VA, and we're not one to bash the VA. We understand that they're under man, they're under staff, and they are working under a microscope. There are a lot of veterans that are out that after OIF and OEF, I don't think that they were properly prepared to see as many veterans to get out with PTSD or TBI. So I understand it. Our organization understands it. And we're just here to kind of help those that are dealing with the TBI to move forward. We want them to utilize all the resources that are out there. And the VA is a great resource to utilize. But we do understand that they are, you know, overwhelmed.
Now, regarding Operation TBI Freedom, can you tell us something about that specifically?
So, yeah, we are a nonprofit organization here in the state of Colorado. We are a veteran-run organization, so everybody that works in our office, we're all veterans. And you guys know my story, but I work with five amazing gentlemen who are also veterans themselves. We all have over 20 years of military experience. And then our program manager, who is not a veteran, but she is a military spouse. Her husband did 21 years in the military as an MP. So she provides that spousal aspect coming from that point of view. So we're all here just trying to help our brothers and sisters, those that have been diagnosed first with a TBI, that live in the state of Colorado. Post 9/11 vets is primarily what we serve. And we're here to kind of help them move forward, show them where all the resources are at here in the state. Referrals, we get referrals from community partners, therapists, we get referrals from the VA, and we're just trying to empower our veteran community here and have them not be dependent on the system, but be independent.
How can a person get referred to your program?
So there's several ways a person can get referred. They can self-refer themselves. They can be referred by a clinician, a licensed therapist here in the state. The VA can refer them. A client can refer. So if we have a client referrals, term referral. So those are some of the ways they can be referred to our program.
And what does Operation TBI Freedom involve? You know, what
so
are
how
all
we,
the go ahead.
Sure, yes. So how we help is we are non-clinical case managers. So really what that means in a nutshell is we're not going to put you on a couch. We're not going to diagnose you. We leave that up to the other professionals to do that. So if that's through the VA or through a licensed therapist that says, yes, this person has some cognitive issues or has a mild form of traumatic brain injury, they can be accepted into our program. And how we help is we education, trying to, if those wish to go back to school and they're having some difficulty, we can provide the resources and referrals to kind of help in their schooling and universities that they're attending. They may not know about receiving accommodations for that disability for a university or college that they may be attending. So education is one. Employment is big here, and getting veterans back into the community and getting them jobs. And then also housing. Housing is another one. There's a big homeless population here, and we're just trying to help out our veterans, those that are homeless, to get housing, to have shelter, to have a sense of stability. We also provide a lot of outdoor activities and outdoor therapy. We look at holistically. So we equine therapy, archery, whitewater rafting, fly fishing, things of that nature to kind of get the veteran out there in the outdoor areas. You're here in the state of Colorado. Why not try to enjoy some of the beautiful landscape that it has to offer? So we try to provide that for our clients.
Now, one of the things that I've run into with some of my TBI PTSD veterans is really, you know, getting them to get out there. You know, it sounds like you got some really great programs and you got some you know, great outreach ideas. But it just seems to me with what I'm dealing with that, you know, I try to tell these men and women, you know, come on, go out there and go do this, this, and that. And then I check on them the next couple weeks after that, and they say, I didn't go do that. And it just seems like it's very hard to get them and take that step. You run into that?
Yeah, so we run into that a lot. So each individual case manager, it's their job, once they get assigned, a client that comes into our program, once they get assigned to a case manager, our case manager just doesn't have, they don't hand out T-shirts and a hat and say, have a nice day. They actively engage with these guys on a monthly basis, calling them up. It's basically an extension of them being in the military, having a battle buddy. So having a person that holds them accountable, that checks up on them, say, hey, how are you doing? How are things going? These are the events that we have. We would love for you to come out. We also have a combat vets group that we have in our organization. It's called Operation Phoenix Recovery, and you have to be a combat vet to be part of the group. But this also provides another avenue for our guys to be able to speak with others that speak the same language. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
They understand what they've gone through, what they've been through. So they speak the same language, and it's great for them to be able to be around other veterans. We're actively talking with them. We're actively engaged with them. We're just wanting the best for them. And anybody that comes into our program, they're not going to pay a dime. We have been very blessed by the generosity of the public here in the state of Colorado. They love the veteran community, so they've donated to our program. They know what we do is vital, and it helps.
Richard, if I could...
Yeah. Jump right in, David.
Thank you. Fred, now you say that your organization serves all veterans throughout Colorado. Where are you located, or what locations are you in?
So we're right here in the heart of Colorado, Colorado Springs. We're surrounded right by Fort Carson, Peterson Air Force Base, Schriever Air Force Base, the Air Force Academy. So we're right here, right downtown in Colorado Springs.
I see. Some of these other veteran groups that you've mentioned or support groups, do they meet at other locations? For instance, if there's a group in Denver or a group in Boulder or some other place, Are there satellite operations?
Sure. So what we just started now is because we're growing and our client base is growing and we service the whole state of Colorado, we just started another group, a combat vets group in Denver. And like anything else, it's starting off slow, getting the word out for those that may be interested to come to the group. And it's all about positivity. Once again, we're not going to put anybody on the couch or rehash what they went through or what their experience is, because you live with that day to day. We don't need to do that on one day out of the week where we kind of get together. We don't need to rehash that. So it's all about uplifting, helping vets realize that not everything in the world today is bad, and you're not in theater now, and you're not in combat, and we want them to recognize that.
I see. Now, you're associated with Craig Hospital, is that correct?
That is correct.
Can you tell us more about that as far as medical care that the Craig Hospital may be providing to veterans in particular?
Sure.
Any special
programs?
Yes.
So what I can tell you is that we were acquired by Craig last year in April. They had an opportunity to look at our program, and they wanted to get into the veteran space, and our program and what Craig does aligns together. Now they deal with the worst case of the worst case, so moderate to very severe traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injury. But what they do provide is those that have that type of injury, regardless if you're a veteran, civilian, you can get into Craig. Craig is one of the, I think it's right now, last thing I checked was number 7, is one of the top rehabilitation hospitals in the nation. And so they have a great wealth of knowledge and people that work there. They work with athletes, you name it, everybody here from around the world. And they have provided a lot of education for us as staff, and also as for our clients to be able to be, because we deal with mild TBIs, not the moderate to severe, because that's outside of our scope. So we turn that over to those that have the professional knowledge to deal with that. But Craig's been a wonderful partner with us, and they've given us an opportunity to grow and to learn.
Well, very good. Now, how can people donate to the program? You mentioned it's a charitable organization. How can they donate to the program in order to help service members, veterans, and their families?
Sure. There's several ways they can donate. So they can like us on Facebook at Operation TBI Freedom, and there's a donation tab there where they can click on, and they can, and that donation goes straight to our organization. Or they can go to craighospital.org/OTF, and then there's a donation tab there where you can hit the donation tab and donate to our program.
Oh, that's great. And Fred, from your experience, what advice would you have for veterans and veteran family members, perhaps, you know, family members who are trying to, who, as you had mentioned earlier, sometimes it's those in the family, a spouse or other relative, that may see that perhaps things just aren't right with the veteran. What advice could you give them to perhaps let them know that there's help out there, where they can get help, those kinds of things?
That's a great question, Dave. So the one piece of advice I could probably give is that be patient with your service member to understand that he or she is going through something that they really can't explain and that you probably can't understand because you haven't been there yourself. And that's nothing against the person who is trying to help. But be patient and to seek out some resources in your area that might be able to help your service member. So VA is the first stop, and then if you're not happy with the services there, there are several organizations in all this great land here in this state that we have in the state of Colorado, but I'm sure there are other organizations that could help out with those that are dealing with PTSD. So the Vet Center is an option as well. We use them quite frequently. If a person is dealing with some mental health issues and they can't get in the VA at an appropriate time, the Vet Center could be definitely a short-term gap for them. And you know, to be able to try to do some resources out there in your state that might be able to help your soldier or the veteran itself.
I see. Well, that's wonderful, because that's something that that we, Richard and I, see a need with the veterans that we help. Sometimes it's just a matter of getting them to know that there is help out there. And as you've said, that part of your program is to be like the equivalent of a battle buddy, to be there to provide frequent support and accountability, if you will. Richard, do you have any other Richard, back to you.
Well, I was just one of the therapies that we have been dealing with, and I wanted to get your comment on this, is we have one client who's now a singer-songwriter, and he was in Iraq and Afghanistan and had a horrible experience with an IED. In fact, as a result of that experience, he was awarded the Purple Heart for rescuing some of his fellow soldiers. Some of them didn't make it. But he turned to singing and songwriting. And we've have others who've turned to painting. What's been your experience in that regard?
Yeah, that's a great question, Richard. So as what you mentioned about the one individual that you're talking about, we also have painting and talking. We find that these therapies unlock our veterans that are dealing with something. First of all, it gets them engaged, especially those that are dealing with a TBI. It works different parts of the brain, and we still do not know the full capacity of how the brain, if it repairs itself after a traumatic brain injury. There's still lots to learn out there, but we think that holistic approach is the best approach. You know, and what we see is veterans don't know what they don't know. There's lots of things that are out there that are they're offered for them to be able to take advantage of, especially the outdoor stuff, especially getting involved in an organization or volunteering with a different organization. We find these things really progress a person forward, and it provides a foundation for them to continue to move forward and not to think about things in the past. That's really when bad things happen. When they start thinking about things in the past, they tend to isolate, and they tend to shun everybody away. And that's not what we don't want. That we don't want our veterans to be a number. We don't want them to be a statistic. They are very important to us, and this is why we do what we do. We don't do this for the money. We do it because we still care, and we're still continuing to serve our brothers and sisters, because there's far too many of them leaving this world on account of suicide. And we need to stop it.
We had a guest on our show several months ago that was who was a Vietnam veteran, and he was a helicopter door gunner and saw, hundreds of missions, a lot of heavy combat, and suffered the effects of PTSD, and he turned to writing. Art, sculpture, music. And he told us when he was on the show that what he basically had to do, and this kind of relates to what you said earlier, Fred, which was telling veterans that their PTSD doesn't define who they were. And our guest named Brian Wizard, he basically said the same thing, maybe slightly different way, which was he had to kind of reinvent himself from being
right.
The door gunner to basically a new person. And, the sense of isolation or the need to kind of isolate from society was something that he's needed to do, but he's been extremely productive in arts and music and other ways and writing a lot, has written many books about his experiences and other topics as well. And we've seen that with some other veteran groups that we've had on the show that have it, the art. One veteran group that we work closely with in Ocala, Florida, which is north central Florida, called Veterans Helping Veterans, That part of Florida is rather rural, and it's well known for horse ranches. So one of their outdoor therapy programs includes, you know, veterans getting out there and riding the horses to get outdoors and fresh air and change of scenery and those kinds of things. Now, Fred, if I could change the subject a little bit here, because, you know, you mentioned before PTSD and TBI. Any insights from your experience and from the training you've had from Craig Hospital and other training, things that people need to understand about maybe the differences and how they overlap PTSD and TBI, different treatments, and perhaps your thought on the extensive use of pills to treat PTSD, the pros and cons. I'll just I know that's a long question, a lot of parts to it, but any thoughts on those topics?
Sure, yeah, I'll try to break that down. So the difficulties in the arena of, you know, trying to diagnose PTSD and TBR are very difficult. So we always suggest those that, you know, think they might have PTSD or TBI, that you get properly a specialist trained individual to get accurate diagnosis. So that's going to the VA, if that's going to a licensed therapist that is a trained either neurologist or a mental health provider to be able to properly tease out the difference between the two, then we always tell our individuals to do that. It's always difficult for patients or clients that are dealing with mental health issues to properly get diagnosed, either that's PTSD or TBI, because the two do kind of overlap. In the middle there, there are very similar symptomatology, you know, irritability, lack of sleep, anxiety. And so if it's not properly teased out, sometimes it can just go, okay, you just have PTSD. But in reality, you might have a TBI issue going on. So we always tell people, those that that have a problem or that have never been diagnosed, to properly get it diagnosed, and to not, you know, self-diagnose yourself. So we're always constantly dealing with that.
Yeah, do you think that can be a challenge, though? I mean, what we've seen with many of the veterans that we've helped is, and not to be overly critical of the VA system, but like you said, they're tremendously understaffed. There can be long wait times to get an appointment and very little time with the providers. But you also end up having to be your own advocate in the healthcare system, you know, as far
that
as follow
correct.
Up.
That is correct.
And if the veterans, many veterans who first of all don't want to be there at all, and it may have been a challenge to get them to get help, any kind of pushback or resistance or bureaucracy or insensitivity from some psychologist who doesn't get it or doesn't seem to understand because they were never in war, you know, that there can be, you know, that kind of disincentive to go in there and get the diagnosis that you're talking about. So I guess one important takeaway would be the importance of persistence and family members. Would you agree with that? Any thoughts, words of wisdom on that issue?
No, I definitely agree with you, David. You said it. You said it great. Persistence is key. Do not give up. It is your health care. You've earned it, and you need to continue to keep going. I know that is very frustrating, and sometimes it can just be like just mind-blowing to go into a clinic or into a VA hospital. But what I would say is that to continue to keep going, if you have a problem or an issue, don't stop. Don't let the system beat you down. Continue to move forward. We have great individuals. You've done something that less than 1% in this country will ever do. Raise their right hand to serve this country and then volunteer to go off to war. And sometimes we tell our clients, those that have, you know, are dealing with PTSD and TBI, they've never left Iraq. They're still dealing with it now, even here in the States. And so it's very difficult for them to kind of separate the two. But persistence is key, is to continue to keep going and continue to work on your health care and mental right. health care as well.
And that's great advice for veterans, and I hope our listeners and those that know veterans take that advice to heart. Any thoughts for members of the public that may deal with veterans and may not fully understand or appreciate what's going on in the veterans' mind? Perhaps their coworkers with the veterans, perhaps their employers, and the veteran is seeking employment, and the veteran is reluctant to disclose, you know, PTSD symptoms or TBI out of fear of not getting the job. Anything you would tell, those that have never been in the military, whether they're employers now or just others, maybe to share your insight from both as a veteran but working with Operation TBI Freedom.
Sure. Yeah, we see this a lot. So PTSD and TBI, they're invisible injuries. You do not see them if you were to see a person, a veteran who was missing an arm or a leg or anything of that nature that you can see with your eyes. PTSD and TBI manifests itself in different forms, in anger, irritability, short temper, short fuse, to lash out at any time. So what I would really say to those that deal with a veteran or an employee of a veteran is to have patience. We always preach patience. Patience is a virtue, and we really believe in that. But it's no excuse for those that are dealing with that as well to lash out at other individuals. But those that have it, sometimes that's just part of the mental health when it comes to PTSD. And getting that type of treatment is key. Getting in to see a behavioral health specialist is key to help with that. That you can put in your kit bag, so when you do have those triggers or something does come up, you can pull it out and say, hey, let's use this, what I've learned in therapy, so I don't have a certain incident. And then everybody that around you will be better for it.
You know, I think,
Fred,
that's great advice.
If I may, David.
Go ahead, Richard.
Thank you. Fred, you bring up something interesting. I did not serve in the military, I've come into, you know, dealing with the veterans over the last 5 years when David and I started this law firm. But since then, I've kind of jumped in, so to speak, and I'm all in, and I deal with a lot of veterans. And it just seems to me that when the veteran has the PTSD and the TBI, that the VA dismisses the TBI so fast. And, you know, I look at the DBQs that they utilize for the TBI, and it just seems like the veteran is completely discounted with regard to those symptoms. And we're, you know, because we're also pursuing the PTSD from a legal standpoint, and my goal is to get the veteran 100% for something and get him the compensation he needs, you know, I vigorously pursue the PTSD. Well, why is it, in your experience, and maybe you don't experience it, but why is it that the TBI gets dismissed so quickly when it comes to the veteran?
Richard, I think, in my personal opinion, is that it's very hard to diagnose that, and it's very tedious, and it takes some time to tease that out. I think it's very easy for the person that's doing the diagnosis, okay, it's just PTSD. It's an easy label to put on, in my opinion, that I think that the work may not want to be put in to really go forward to kind of tease out, is this more TBI related? Because it's really not easy to diagnose a TBI. You know, you have several things that you can do. You can do the self-reporting. You can do the neuropsych evaluation, which is cognitive testing. You really can't really test if a person has a TBI through an MRI or CT scan. You can see if there is some damage that has been done to the brain, but that doesn't really give you a true diagnosis of a traumatic
brain injury. So let me ask you this,
especially if it's a mild form.
Let me ask you this then, because I'm drawing some analogies with the CTE with our football players.
Correct.
About 2 weeks ago, a study came out. There were 111 former NFL players deceased, and their brains were donated to study research. And out of the 111, 110 had CTE, which obviously was caused during their time on the football field. Would you use the same analogy there for a veteran who's suffering from TBI?
There is some correlation there. I wouldn't say there isn't. I believe that there could be some correlation between the two examples, the NFL player and a soldier who has a significant TBI.
I was reading the other day, if I could just interject, I was reading in VA materials that some VA researchers had conducted some specially designed brain imaging on veterans who had been within 100 feet of bomb blasts, and they found that in blasts, even those that did not necessarily lead to brain concussion, that the veterans who were exposed showed brain imaging. In the brain imaging, they showed brain aging in imaging that was designed to detect the leakiness and the fraying of the white matter in the brain, and that as a result of this brain aging in veterans who were near bomb blasts, within 100 feet, that could result in requiring increased rehabilitation time and an earlier need for health care for aging issues such as dementia. And the VA apparently has ongoing research. And Fred, you're probably far more aware of that than I am, and being associated with Craig Hospital. But as you said earlier, I think it's the brain is very complex, and there's still a lot to be learned and figured out. As we get close to wrapping up tonight, I'd like to thank Fred for being our special guest. And Fred, could you tell our listeners one more time what your websites are, how they can learn more about Operation TBI Freedom, Craig Hospital, how they can donate to Operation TBI Freedom?
Sure, no problem. So our website is www.operationtbifreedom.org. You can go to our website anytime. And you can like us on Facebook. We're out on social media, and you can donate through our Facebook page. You can also donate through our Craig website page, which is www.craighospital.org/OTF. And you can learn about, we have a lot of educational stuff on our pages that talk about traumatic brain injury. What are some of the tools that you can use if you think you have a TBI or you've been diagnosed with a TBI? There's brain apps out there. There's different organizations that are definitely all across the state that are willing to help our veteran community, those that are dealing with a TBI. There's Brainline. There's DivVic. DivVic is Defense Veteran Brain Injury Center, and that's at, and they have their website at dvbic.docoe.mil, and that's a great source. We use them all the time. And then Craig Hospital as well as another source for us here in the state of Colorado. So there's lots of information out there, but just getting the right information is key.
Well, very good. And, Fred, thank you so much for being our special guest tonight. You've been very insightful and informative, and I hope our listeners have appreciated the wisdom you've shared with us. We invite you back anytime in the future you'd like to be on the Veterans News Hour, and thank you again and wish you all the best, all the success and everything. Thank you,
Fred.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Dave and Rich. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Good evening. Richard.
That was very insightful, David. Very good.
Yes, and I know, I hope our listeners are taking to heart all the things that Fred mentioned about the importance of persistence, seeking out the help that it is out there.
Yeah, I like what he had to say. about the TBI, because we, you know, you know as well as I do that we run into that quite a bit. And when I say run into it, the frustration that our veterans have when we're seeking a disability compensation for TBI, and it seems like they get ignored. And then you look at those DBQs that come back, and you know, I can see the frustration.
Yeah, the DBQs being the disability benefit questionnaires, which the VA uses to document an evaluation. But what it also tells me, Richard, is that if they, meaning the VA, is not taking the time to do a thorough diagnosis, to do the test that might be necessary, as Fred mentioned, just for the disability side, for the disability compensation side, they're not willing to do that. It certainly makes one question whether they're doing that for the treatment side, you know, because the VA has the healthcare side, then they have the disability benefit, the compensation side, and the healthcare side, tremendously understaffed to the tune of about 40,000 openings nationwide for the VA, and you know, it does make one wonder whether the resources are sufficient there for the VA. Tend to think not. But in any event, it's a very important issue. We thank Fred Hinton for sharing his insight. And Richard, as we're drawing the show to a close for this evening, if you wouldn't mind reminding our listeners about a VA program that could be very relevant to the topics we'll be talking about tonight, the Coaching Into Care program.
Yeah, I was saying the same thing, David. Yeah, it's very pertinent to what we talked about tonight. So if you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call toll-free at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care, the number is 1-888-823-7458. Along that same note, I would like to say that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. And you can also call Fred's program, probably. I'm sure they would be willing to help, too.
Right. Well, it's been a quick show. It's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to our show here on BBS Radio. We'd like to thank again our special guest tonight, Mr. Frederick Hinton of Operation TBI Freedom of Craig Hospital in Colorado Springs, Colorado. We'd like to once again thank our show sponsors, including American Legion Post 303 of Florida, Mr. Charles Newman and Corey and Hurley Law Group. And I'd like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great work he does, and invite our listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our radio show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour, where you can also find very informative archived podcasts of our prior shows for your benefit. And I urge you to look those over, and you'll see that we've had some excellent guests over the last 6 months. So please tune in next week, same time, same station. Until then, have a great week. Good night.
Good night, David.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.